The previous installments of the story of Baruch Viazner, we told about this earnest young man who desired a path in Avodas Hashem and who came to Brisk to learn at the feet of the great Tzaddik and Mekubal Rab Shloime, the Rosh Yeshiva of in Brisk, who studied with him secretly. Baruch's secret one day became known, and Rab Shloime told Baruch that he had come to the conclusion that it was time that young Baruch leave Brisk. Now began a new period of exile for Baruch. He followed along the old lines, traveling through towns and villages, earning his way by taking an odd job here and there. Thus Baruch reached Smile, and as always he made his headquarters in the Beis HaMedrash. As it was summertime, he got himself a cart, went into the woods, and chopped up a big store of wood. He rented a cellar in the town, and there brought each day's harvest. Thus he acquired quite a large stock so that he could continue selling his wood in the winter time. He tied up the wood in handy bundles and was content to feel that his living was assured with Hashem's help. In the Beis HaMedrash, which was Baruch's new home, there was an old man who attracted Baruch's attention. It seemed that this old man was in the habit of going begging from door to door. It was late at night in the middle of winter, and Baruch sat in the Beis HaMedrash, engrossed in his studies. Suddenly he noticed that his companion of the Beis HaMedrash had come in and was quietly weeping in a corner. This was so unlike the old man's usual behavior that Baruch went up to him and asked him what was troubling him. "My dear friend Yosef Avram, the oven maker, died today," he replied, wiping his eyes with his handkerchief. "He was such a wonderful man, but no one knew his great worth. He was a nister, somebody who concealed his true greatness, who gave everything away that he had, barely leaving sufficient for his family's needs. He never had a penny in his house at night, for he just kept a minimum sum for his daily expenditure, and the rest he gave away secretly to charity. And now he has passed away, leaving his wife and daughter living in poverty in a tumble-down house which is without window panes. The wintry wind blows in, and they haven't even any coal with which they could make a fire and warm themselves up. It is a great pity for them," he ended sadly. "But you know that I have a big stock of wood," said Baruch eagerly. "Show me where they live and we will bring them some fuel at once." Baruch now realized from the old man's talk that he too must be a nister, and felt drawn to him in consequence. "Do tell me who you are and what is your name," Baruch asked him then. "I am known as Nochem Aaron the Tailor," he replied. When Baruch and the old man reached the widow's house, Baruch beheld a positively ramshackle dwelling, and his sympathy was aroused for the poor widow and her daughter. He was happy indeed that he was in a position to lighten their troubles by giving them wood for warmth. By comparison with such people, Baruch felt he was positively rich. When they returned to the Beis HaMedrash, Baruch decided to ask the old man to help him with a passage in the Zohar which he was studying, with which he was finding difficulty. "Rab Nochem Aaron," said Baruch to him, "could you explain this passage to me? I don't seem to understand it properly." The old man looked into it and proceeded to explain it to Baruch without hesitation. Baruch could see now that he was dealing with no ordinary person, and he was indeed convinced beyond all doubt that Nochem Aaron was truly a nister, as he had already suspected. Baruch and Nochem Aaron went every day of the Shiva week to the house of the departed Yosef Avram, where they helped to get a minyan together. They davened there and also said tilim for the soul of the deceased. Yosef Aaron had been regarded as a very ordinary Jew, and poor at that, so nobody was anxious to go there to daven. Thus, if it had not been for the efforts of the old man and Baruch, it would have been difficult indeed to get a minyan together for the necessary mourning period. From this time onwards, a very warm friendship sprang up between Baruch and Nochem Aaron. They lived together at the Beis HaMedrash and found ample opportunity to study together. And naturally, they also studied Kabbalah. One day, Nochem Aaron said to his young friend, "Baruch, you know I think a great deal of you, so don't misunderstand me if I make a suggestion to you." "Tell me what you mean," said Baruch, with interest and curiosity. "Well, I believe that you would be a suitable match for my late friend's daughter. I've already told you what a fine person Yosef Avram was, and his daughter should make a good wife." To Nochem Aaron's delight, Baruch agreed to the match, and before long he proposed and was accepted, and the marriage took place without delay. He took his wife and mother-in-law away from the house in which Yosef Avram had lived for 30 years. They settled in a nearby village, and Baruch, with his experience, had no difficulty in making a living. In a very short time indeed, Baruch found that he was doing so well that he could really consider himself wealthy. From all the time that Baruch had spent in the woods and in his jobs as a woodchopper, he had acquired quite a good knowledge of timber. He therefore now set up a business of buying up lots in forests and chopping down the trees. He then chopped up the trees into chips and made them up into convenient bundles for firewood. Little by little, his business progressed, and very soon he found that he was a rich man, and it was soon became known that Baruch, as he was called, was the owner of a number of fields and forests. Thus 5 years passed, during which time Baruch induced more and more Jews to come and settle in his village, providing them all with a living and not neglecting their spiritual needs either. He conducted a shir for them and later had a Beis HaMedrash built where there were 10 scholars studying uninterruptedly, whom he himself supported. He also spent a great deal of time and study at the Beis HaMedrash, where he would study Kabbalah. Baruch was possibly the only Nister, the only hidden tzaddik, who was at the same time a wealthy man. He had long since provided the village with Achnosas Orchim, with a guest house, in which wayfarers could be housed and fed and welcomed with respect. It was here that he met many mystics with whom he was glad to have discussions. At that time, the name of Rabbi Yoel, the Baal Shem of Zamach, was beginning to be known throughout the Jewish world. Baruch had already heard of this great man, and Nochem Aaron knew of him even before he became famous, and had told Baruch many things of interest about him. Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem was a disciple of Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem of Worms, who had made the former his successor. Baruch made up his mind that he must meet this Baal Shem and become acquainted with him. Baruch now got busy with his preparations for his visit to the Baal Shem Tov of Zamosh. When he arrived there, he stayed for 6 months, and when he returned home, it was plain to see that his trip had pleased him greatly. As soon as he was at home, he threw himself into a still more intensive study of Kabbalah and began to draw his 10 boarding scholars into this study as well. Baruch continued thus for 10 years, during which time he was in constant touch with the Talmidim of the Baal Shem of Zamoch, who in the course of their wanderings also visited Baruch. Baruch was by now regarded as a great Mikubal, a great Kabbalist. Suddenly Baruch made up his mind to leave the village in which he had lived for 15 years, and where he had amassed considerable wealth. He sold all his possessions, presented the 10 scholars who had enjoyed free board and lodgings with his houses and orchards. He also gave large sums of money to charitable and educational institutions in Smila. He then packed up, took his family, and departed without leaving any indication as to his destination. Baruch soon bought a new piece of property about 10 miles outside Slutsk. There, too, he built a Beis HaMedrash as well as a guest house for wayfarers. Within a few months' time, he had already assembled a new group of 10 poor scholars whom he supported in the same way as he had done in the village he had just left. He provided them and their families with houses, gardens, food, and clothing. In fact, they were entirely free of financial worries so that they could sit and study with clear and easy minds. Baruch did not tell anyone where he had come from, but it was plain to see immediately that he was a great scholar and tzaddik. Baruch had long had a great urge to collect a picked group of students and teach them. This urge increased now that he was in his new estate. He therefore made up his mind to establish a yeshiva here, and in a comparatively short time, Baruch had his yeshiva. This new yeshiva of his was to be different from any other yeshiva. Not only was it to be comprised of picked students of exceptional ability, but these had to conform to certain requirements and would be accepted only on certain conditions. Firstly, no student under 15 or over 16 years of age would be admitted. Secondly, every student admitted must give an undertaking to remain at the yeshiva for a period of not less than 6 years and would not be allowed to go away for even a single day under any circumstances. Thirdly, the students must be prepared to accept the ruling of the yeshiva in all matters relating to their study as well as personal conduct. They were to devote their time and attention completely to their studies. All their requirements regarding food, clothing, and lodgings to be provided for by Baruch. Baruch chose one of the scholars of the estate he had near Smila and had him come to his new estate near Slutsk. This was a Nashi Yisroel, a brilliant scholar and Baruch's friend and confidant. Rab Nashi Yisroel was a Talmud, a disciple of the Baal Shem of Zamosh, and his 3 sons had also been students at the yeshiva of the Baal Shem. On their return home, these 3 young men were great scholars too, God-fearing, and of very fine character. Baruch appointed these 4 picked men to conduct his yeshiva, while he himself also conducted the shiurim, the lessons. He chose 26 boys for his yeshiva, and within a year, it was evident that he had made remarkable progress with them. Everything had gone according to plan, and Baruch was so satisfied that in the 2nd year, he admitted an additional 20 boys. Thus he did each year, with the result that the number of students continued to increase, and even when the first-year students had completed their 6-year course, there still remained a goodly number of students at the yeshiva. During all this time, time, Baruch did not neglect his business. He kept an eye open for anything which would be a source of employment for more Jews. Thus, when he found an opportunity of leasing or buying new estates, he did so, and immediately engaged Jewish workmen to manage them. To needy Jews, he also rented the mills and inns attached to the estates, sold the fishing rights in the rivers and lakes, and leased the fields for agricultural development. In this way, Baruch gave employment to innumerable Jews, which was a source of great satisfaction to him, especially when he saw that many of them prospered and became wealthy. They all came to Baruch with their business matters. They knew about his remarkable yeshiva and his brilliant students, and admired and respected him greatly. When they looked for husbands for their daughters, Baruch naturally recommended his senior scholars. Thus, the influence of the yeshiva spread far and wide. 15 years passed by, and many were the marriages arranged by Baruch for the daughters of the Jews of the district with his yeshiva students. Needless to say, the students were all imbued with the spirit of Torah and service of God, upon which his yeshiva laid so much stress and set up their new homes upon these foundations. The Vat HaAratzis, the powerful council of the four lands, held its meeting at that time and found it necessary to send a message of greeting and congratulation to Baruch for his great and noble work. They acknowledged the success of his yeshiva, where not only was Torah taught, but the characters of the students were trained, and their personal and physical well-being was cared for. They acknowledged, too, the worthiness of his action in providing so many Jews with the means of earning their livelihood, as well as taking a personal interest in them and their families, as evidenced by the many matches Baruch had arranged between their daughters and his students. At that time, Slutsk, which was the city which was close to where Baruch had set up his estate, Slutsk was one of the towns which strongly opposed the teaching and studying of Kabbalah. They also objected to the many Nestorim, the hidden tzaddikim, who wandered about, calling the ordinary Jewish folk to the service of God. This matter had been raised on more than one occasion in Slutsk. Meetings were usually arranged on market days, when they could be sure of a large audience. Many were the voices raised in argument, which often enough ended in noisy dissensions. As it happened, Slutsk was a town of scholars who were anxious to see Torah scholars cared for and honored. Special rooms were provided for scholarly visitors at the community house so that they need not stay at the town's general house, even though there too scholars were treated preferentially. The guest house was divided into three parts. One part was assigned to ordinary visitors. The second part was for scholars. And the third part was provided for especially distinguished scholars. The rooms at the community house were of two classes. One for well-known Magidim preachers who used to visit the town, and the other for celebrities of worldwide fame, of course, worldwide Torah fame. The scholars of Slutsk were renowned for their fanaticism, and their opposition to mystics and Kabbalah was so furious that whenever someone expressed his opposition to the Kabbalists of the Baal Shem of Worms and the Baal Shem of Zamuch, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, and Rab Elio Baal Shem, that person who expressed his opposition was termed a Slutsker because Slutsk was such a center of opposition. The Kabbalists and mystics, on their part, tried to ignore the hate and enmity directed against them, and made frequent visits to Slutsk to try and infuse some of their spirit into this fanatical Mesnagdic stronghold. But the opposition was too great for them to achieve their objective. It was because of this state of affairs that Baruch chose an estate not far from Slutsk to establish his yeshiva and his other spheres of influence, so that indirectly he would succeed in undermining the stronghold of Mesnagdim in Slutsk and building in its place an appreciation of all he was working for a Baruch, you will recall, was a great mekubal in his own right. Was no easy task, but by dint of hard work and through the visits of the mystics and Kabbalists who frequented his guest house and the training of his yeshiva students for their role in life, the stage was set for the weakening of the influence of the fanatical Jews of Slutsk. Although Baruch kept politics out of his yeshiva, he was nevertheless afraid that his two sons, who were ready for marriage, might become the sons-in-law of local Jews who were fanatically opposed to Kabbalists, and who might therefore bring such fanaticism into his yeshiva, destroying what he had spent years to build up. Consequently, Baruch decided to send his sons, Yosef and Avram, to Lemberg, where they eventually married very fine girls, the daughters of devout but poor Jews. Baruch supported them as well as their wives and parents-in-law. For the first few years after their marriages, Yosef and Avram continued with their Torah studies, but then they decided to take up business. They took an estate on lease and worked along the same lines as their father. They had a Beis HaMedrash built on their estate, and it was also a guest house for wayfarers. And Yosef and Avram both gave charity most generously. The conclusion of the tale of Rabor, how he meets the Baal Shem Tov, Emir Tz Hashem, in the coming installments.